this morning is United States against Latrice.
May it please
Mr. Hughes.
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Mr. Saleeb. Before I begin my argument, a brief preliminary matter, if I may. At the time we were initially granted oral argument, I believe 15 minutes was reserved. We had asked for 5 minutes on rebuttal. If I may, I'd like to cut that down to 3 minutes for rebuttal. In this case, the consecutive sentences imposed were neither procedurally correct nor substantively reasonable. As this Court is aware, Ms. Latrice was convicted of fourteen counts a violation of 26 U.S.C. Section 72062, willful preparation of tax returns containing false information. Now, in determining that the sentence was neither procedurally correct nor substantively reasonable, one must begin by looking at the manner in which the tax loss was calculated. As in any tax case, under Title 26, the amount of loss is a key factor, if not the determining factor, in the length, the ultimate length of the sentence. In this case, testimony was introduced that Ms. Latrice had prepared approximately 4,400 tax returns over a three-year period. At sentencing, the government submitted that approximately 662 returns had been taken out of those 4,400 and audited. Now, we would submit that the record is somewhat unclear as to how those 662 returns were selected for audit. Out of that 662 returns, the government then took 100 returns and based an estimated average tax loss on each of those 100 returns of $3,000. Now, it should be pointed out that at trial, there were 14 tax returns involved for a combined total loss of approximately $31,000, which would be slightly over $2,000 per return. So questions about the methodology by which the tax loss is calculated already begin when one considers the difference, the key difference between the amount established at trial and the amount established at sentencing.
We understand there's a lot of question. There's a lot of play in the joints in these numbers, but didn't the defense have an adequate opportunity to respond to this information? Information available for years?
To a certain extent, Your Honor, I believe in a footnote to our brief, we note that the trial counsel, I was not counsel at trial, requested certain documents concerning tax disclosure forms that various taxpayers.
Well, there were numerous opportunities to request information. Delays were granted repeatedly. Was there some obstacle to the, if there's something unreliable about the government's calculations, Ms. Latrice could have testified about that at sentencing, or somebody could have looked at the numbers, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, I believe it, but again, I think the defense was handicapped to the extent that a large portion of what it requested, it's my understanding, was never actually produced. And again, I've covered that in a footnote that discusses these disclosure statements and forms that were requested, and I believe the government admitted that were not turned over to trial counsel. But be that as it may, I do acknowledge there was an opportunity, this case, in going into our speedy trial argument, 662 days between indictment and trial. But in any event, there was an opportunity to examine, but given the voluminous nature of the returns that were involved, I think there's a real question, again, as to how from 100 returns out of a sample of nearly 4,500, how the court could place any reliability or could rely.
I understand there's a question, but why can't the court also just rely on the adversarial process? If there's a problem, tell us about it.
Well, I think even the court actually had some questions about the manner in which the loss was calculated. I believe Judge
right,
Palmer.
Right, Judge Palmer adjusted downward, but why couldn't she declined to go down further in the absence of any affirmative showing of unreliability?
Well, I think in this case, the showing of unreliability rose to such a level that when you had the loss at sentencing at a 50% variance to the loss proven at trial, that basically what happened was extrapolation.
Doesn't the loss proved at trial projected over all of those returns still get her in the range of $400,000 to $1 million?
I believe that depending on whether those 14 returns at trial were, in fact, representative of the entire sample. I think that the question could be raised as to, did the government cherry-pick the 14 returns and went to trial? Is it possible that the other returns could have been a loss?
Right. All of these are possibilities. But you all had the opportunity to come forward and show that there were problems with this calculus, and I didn't see any.
Well, I think that the problem with the calculus, again, is based on extrapolation. And that's how the court obviously arrived at the loss determination in this case. It extrapolated. And
we know they're allowed, that the court is allowed to do a reasonable estimate. It doesn't have to be precise.
However, in this case, I believe the manner in which the extrapolation was employed or used, in effect, relieve the government of part of its burden at sentencing. Now, I acknowledge standard.
Assume you did a normal statistical analysis and computed the standard deviation of what the total would be if you're trying to project from these 14. How large would the standard deviation be?
I don't know the answer to that question, Your Honor. I'm not a...
It's a really simple statistic to compute.
Okay. And obviously that wasn't done in this case, but in any event, I believe...
But it's the kind of thing you could almost do on the back of an envelope and tell the judge, look, I don't even have to compute a t-statistic. I'm just going to compute the standard deviation, and that standard deviation spans one of these breakpoints in the guidelines. That might be an interesting argument, but if you didn't do that, very hard to see where the district judge went off the rails.
Well, I would like to point out that obviously she did have some concerns. I think the court has already acknowledged and recognized that she did have some concerns about whether this was truly a random sample. And as you noted, that's perhaps why the range was reduced down to the 400,000 to a million range, dropping Ms. Latrice to the guideline range of 20 in this case. But it's our position that in doing so...
One thing you could do is just draw 14 other returns at random, compute the numbers, take a different standard deviation, and see if you get a different range.
And I think that perhaps that could have been done. However, I think the government was clear and conceded to a certain extent at sentencing that the selection of the 100 returns was not entirely random. And I believe I'm into my rebuttal time. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Mr. Salib.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Peter Salib, and I represent the United States. Your Honors, the loss amount that was calculated was not error, and it was not an abuse of discretion. That loss amount was calculated reasonably, and the numbers play out even given counsel's argument. $2,000 estimate at trial for the loss of the 14 returns times 616 returns, which is the discounted number of the unchallenged returns, still yields a loss amount of $1.2 million, still higher than the district court ultimately discounted and gave Ms. Latrice a benefit in the guideline range.
Mr. Salib, I thought the problem here is more basic, and I'd like you to address what we decided in the Schroeder case. The real question, in essence, is whether it's fair to use civil audit results like this to prove tax loss against a preparer in a criminal case.
Schroeder did address what was not criminal conduct and the standard as it was outlined in Radzyszewski.
But it used the same methodology, right?
It did.
The government used the same methodology. We'll do civil audits and send out notices, and we'll basically assume that anything unchallenged by those taxpayers was criminal fraud on the part of the tax preparer, the return preparer.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And we said that wasn't good enough. So why is this enough?
This is enough, Your Honor, because, frankly, the sheer volume of the returns that were submitted, as counsel stated, there were over 4,400 returns prepared in just 3 years by Ms. Latrice. Only 662 were selected, and again, 93% or almost all of them exhibited the same type of deductions that were fraudulent, that were found at trial by the jury. Unemployed, unreimbursed employee expenses, charitable deductions that were severely inflated, if not completely falsified, as well as educational expenses. All of those bore out in those 662
That's not exactly modus operandi, is it? you've got pretty much the whole spectrum of deductions there.
That's true, Judge, and those three specifically were where the vast majority of the loss amount was calculated. Thousands of dollars were claimed, and as exhibited at trial through the 14 returns that were submitted in the indictment, that it was the same thing over and over and over again. And as the court stated, none of this was challenged at sentencing. It's a clearly erroneous standard. And the government met a reasonable estimate of the loss in a way that was reasonably calculated.
If we affirm this, what should we say about Schroeder?
What this court can say about Schroeder, the court can leave it alone.
It's a precedent of the court that is very closely on point.
It is, Your Honor.
And it was issued before this sentencing proceeding, I think in the same district. So I was a little curious to see reliance on the same methodology.
What I believe the court can do is look at the sheer volume of information that was presented at sentencing. The spreadsheet, the entirety of the spreadsheet was attached, and that bore out essentially the same exact criminal conduct that was elicited at trial. We only moved on 14 counts. This court could affirm Schroeder or not address it, but distinguish it if the court desires on the sheer volume of returns that were submitted. And frankly, again, it was a benefit to Ms. Latrice that the government didn't submit 4,400 potentially fraudulent returns to get a loss amount even higher.
Judge Pallmeyer was struggling with quite reasonably asking, how many hundreds of people do we have to call in here in order to do this loss calculation? And frankly, I was wondering whether this doesn't indicate some need to revisit the guideline for tax preparers to relieve the courts and the government of having to prove thousands of individual cases as a part of putting together a decent tax loss.
That would be something the court could do. Obviously, the Sentencing Commission would have to act on that. But, again, to make 662 or 616 people come in at sentencing for the government to prove a loss amount by a reasonable estimate standard, I think is overburdensome and unnecessary. As the court was given the spreadsheets, the calculations, the numbers bore out, and again, a discount was ultimately given in this case. If there are no further questions from the panel, we do rest on our brief and ask the court to affirm the sentence and conviction. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Hughes?
Your Honor, nothing further, and we would resubmit the request for relief contained in the brief. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.